Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
That's awesome. Awesome.
That's awesome.
Awesome. Awesome. Awesome.
Oh, dude, that's awesome.
That's awesome. Really awesome.
Awesome.
That's awesome.
Oh, awesome. That's
awesome.
With Stephen Bradford. Stevie B!
What up, buddy?
Yo, duder. What's going on, man?
Way too much coffee today, I'm going to tell you that right now.
Oh,
man. I've had so much coffee and I'm sweating because I've had so much coffee.
So maybe dial it back.
No, I don't think so. Not today, buddy. Today we're going to have some more coffee because I'm excited about this episode number two with Johnny Jackson.
I know people are loving part one, which is awesome. I mean, you know, we had such a blast talking to him, and you know, I think you guys, he's been in your life for a long time, so it's cool to learn even more about somebody, isn't it?
Yeah, it's cool. What's cool is that you get to learn more about him. Really? I think that's cool because you guys have passed a lot and you know him through me kind of, but to really get to sit down and talk, you know, with this kind of format is just really cool.
Well, you know, it was funny because, you know, we talked sometimes with guests. If one of us knows the other one better, like we just assume that the person that knows them better will ask all the questions and kind of lead it. But I sometimes find myself so interested
that you don't talk.
I ask more questions than I thought I would. And I think that's probably makes sense, right? Because for someone that you don't know as well, you're going to have more questions for them than someone that you do know well.
Absolutely.
It's, you know, obviously you and I spend a lot of time together, but you and him have spent a lot of time together too. Yeah. So like you talk about him all the time. And so it was a real pleasure to get to know him in that way too. Yeah. So anyway,
cool.
So part two,
baby,
which is right here. Enjoy it, guys. We dive in a little bit more to his acting technique, his kind of approach to human existence in general. And it's pretty lovely. So enjoy it.
I mean, there's no doubt that you have a gift. I mean, especially as a kid, to do the stuff that you did and to have the depth you did as a 9-year-old or 11-year-old, it was incredible. It's incredible to watch, you know, and it's great that you were with Jeannie and Tony because you didn't have really the chance to pick up any bad habits at all, which a lot of times you can't, you know, that's not a knock on any other actors that are on shows, but sometimes there's things, you know, especially being on a soap that you can pick up some bad habits, even people who've been on for a long time, you know, and especially a kid who's a sponge and you're learning from those two, which is amazing. But you also had this depth, like to draw on pain at 11 years old. You know, the way you were able to do it was incredible because I remember having conversations with you and you're like, oh, I just, you know, I'm in the moment and then I'll just imagine it.
Yeah.
You were doing a lot of imagination because you didn't have anything to draw on in your life.
Yeah. I wasn't.
You know?
That's right. Yeah.
It's easier for someone who who might be older. Like, you know, Maurice is a method guy. So everything he does was torturing him from past stuff that you didn't have that to draw on as an actor, you know? So was a lot of the stuff when you had to do emotional stuff, which you've had to do a lot on GH, especially younger. I mean, when you're reading the script and you're breaking it down, are there times where you have to use your imagination in the scene, you know, where you're like, hey, this could be my dad dying for real. Or this could be, I mean, how what was that process like?
Yeah, no, I remember having those conversations with you and with Tony and with Maurice, you know, at the time. And it was a lot of really interesting just experiments of how to go about it. And it's imagination. And I think on a deeper level, it's some kind of empathy and compassion, you know. Almost in a, not to be too grandiose, but from my perspective, it's like, it's a, almost a cosmic empathy with humanity, you know? Mm. So I don't necessarily have to go through a drug addiction myself to look at someone who is going through that, let's say, and have my heart ripped out because of what I'm witnessing.
Sure.
So, you know, that was sort of the foundation and I struggled with these things a lot, you know, in General Hospital, and it's an incredible, incredible place to work through these things. I mean, I remember because you get to experiment, and if it doesn't work, it only airs once.
Right.
Right. Right. You get another chance.
Yeah. In history, so much. Yeah.
Yeah. And I would watch the shows, you know, because I at an early age, I wanted to feel, because I could remember what I felt like during the scene. And then I got to see a couple weeks later how it came off. And I thought, oh, interesting. That was much bigger than I thought. Or, wow, that didn't actually come through at all. And you try to kind of gauge to feel what you're doing subjectively, how that's actually going to come across, you know, for the audience. And I was struggling with these things. And I remember maybe I was around 15, the storyline with Becky, you know, when Elizabeth was attacked and Lucky found her in the woods. And the next 3 to 6 months, I don't know, the storyline was him trying to help her recover from this traumatic experience. So, you know, as a 15, 16 year old person, I was wrestling with all of this. Mm-hmm. And it really did open up some things for me in terms of my acting preparation, you know, and I eventually started, you know, kind of jotting down some of those questions and ideas. And gosh, I don't know how many years later, it's 2000, maybe 15 or 16. That was the small book I did called The Mystery of Art, which was kind of an exploration of,
that's cool,
of how to approach art from a, you know, almost like a spiritual perspective. Because it was impossible for me to look at the face of evil, and that's how I related to what had happened to this character. This is just utter evil. How to confront that? You naturally start asking those questions everybody asks in their life, like, how could this happen? You know,
sure.
Why does this kind of suffering exist? And you know, it. So in some sense, it's the compassion and. You know, the even when we went through the scenes a few years ago, Steve, with the death, you know, of Jake and everything, and I remember none of us wanted to go through those scenes. None of us wanted to walk through that. You know, everybody was just like, oh, you know.
I know. I remember that day. One of the days, yes. Just like, dude.
Oh yeah, I remember too.
We got to do this.
I know.
It was really difficult.
And one of the things I remember for me walking through it was, okay, I want these scenes, if there's going to be anything other than just, you know, going through this heavy thing, if there's going to be anything meaningful to come out of it, it was almost like a prayer to say, anyone who's gone through this kind of suffering and grief, I want these scenes to be cathartic for them. I want it to be almost like a prayer, you know? And so you start to feel, you think of people as well that have gone through those things that you know in your life, and your heart, you know, cries out for them. And so there's the imagination of the character and what the character's going through, but there's also this other thing going on, which is really wanting to be able to connect with, you know, the human condition, so to speak. And so all of that came from those young years of experimenting. Sure. And working with Tony and Jeannie, you know?
Yeah. And I think, I mean, you have a great vulnerability anyway, and you haven't, cause you're a very humble guy and, you know, you have a lot of humility, and I that vulnerability has never gone away, you know? And I think that's so important for an artist.
Yeah.
You know, to have that vulnerability, whether it's music or acting, because if that's your foundation, you're going to be able to do a lot of stuff from that foundation, as opposed to being, you know, just completely shut off. You know, so it's admirable, man. It's always awesome to watch too.
Well, that's very kind, Steve. I mean, and isn't that the hardest thing in the world? Because, you know, to go out in front of people and do anything, whether it's, you know, speak, I mean, public speaking is up there on the list of greatest fears that people have, you know?
Sure. Yeah.
Is that your worst nightmare or no, not anymore?
Not anymore. Probably was at some point. But whether it's public speaking or singing or performing, anything like, or athletes, you know, like go out there in the Olympics and, you know, all this kind of stuff, it is one of the most vulnerable things that we could ever do.
Oh, yeah.
So the instinct is to somehow protect yourself, but that's the enemy because you have to be vulnerable.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's the whole.
I know it's a crazy life, man. Think about it. You know, now that we've been doing these live shows and what you said about doing the music and connecting with people. Mm. I mean, we're going on a ride with 300 or 400 people right there.
Yeah.
Together.
Yeah.
Which you don't have a chance to do when you're acting, right? You go on a ride with your scene partner, Brad. Brad and I were talking about this, like, mm-hmm. okay, here's our scene. Here's the three pages. Here are the constraints, but here's our time together.
Yes.
Right. Here's our time to do something. Whatever happens, going to happen. We're going to connect, maybe find a moment or two out of this. But then you're in front of the people and it's just like, it's an amazing journey, but you do have to shake that. You know, when you're doing, especially performances, because look, U2, Bon Jovi, all these guys, they've performed so many times. And you know, as well as I do, there's days where they're like, I don't want to do this. Mm-hmm. Like this is the last thing I want to do today.
Right.
You know, and then they find a way because they're artists and performers. Okay, it's showtime. Let's go. Shake it off. We got to give the people, we got to connect, you know, and I just find it so fascinating.
Yeah. Well, and I was just going to say that, you know, what you guys do and what you have been doing for the last couple of years in particular in your live shows, I sit back and look at that because you've shown me some clips, Stephen. You know, it's like, man, for who I am, that scares the living daylights out of me. I have such admiration and respect for that kind of mind that you guys have to put something like that together, to keep it fresh, but also have a structure and to, you know, it's this incredible balance of preparation and chaos that happens. And I just think that's so cool. It's an amazing thing.
Thanks, man.
And go ahead, Brad, you had a question.
Well, I was curious, you've made a lot of decisions to a lot of zags, right? And, and you know, I've heard tell of, like, sometimes, you know, this last time you left GH was maybe because there was some, I don't know, fatigue is the word, but like, we're just ready to take on something different or ready to take a break from some of this, you know, because it is your first stint on GH were, and then you started doing movies and stuff. Was it like, do you remember those transitions? In what spirit did those transitions happen? Mm-hmm. Was it looking for something different? Was it ready to move on? Was it like, what were those trends? Cause it seems like you have very thoughtful transitions in your life and yet there have been a fair amount of them. So I'm curious the spirit of them, you know?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I mean, the first transition, I think the first stint I did on GH was close to 6 years.
Yeah.
And I had a 3-year contract originally. You know, 3 years when you're 11.
It's a long time, Meg. Exactly. Right.
I mean, that's a huge part of your life. By the time you're 14, that's more than, you know, what is that? More than a
It's like a fifth, quarter. You're a fifth. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Of your life, you know, right. I was so ready to stop after 3 years. I mean,
sure.
But my manager at the time convinced me to stay for another two and a half years or so. So I did. And I'm very thankful that I did because, you know, there was a lot I needed to learn about myself and, a lot of things that took place at that time. When I left, you know, the entertainment world was quite different back then. This was maybe 1999, I'm guessing. And there was still there was more of a divide between film and TV at that point, you know?
Yeah.
And I remember leaving General Hospital and there were a couple projects that, a couple of primetime TV projects that I got offered at that point. And I remember turning them down because I just couldn't do it. You know, I said, look, I just got done with 6 years on a show. I can't sign a 7-year contract. And one of the shows went 7 years.
Oh, wow.
That I turned down. I was really grateful that I you know, it would have taken me out of LA. My whole life would have been different.
Yeah.
And so I went on the adventure of doing films and auditioning, and, you know, I was grateful to work on some really good projects, that stretched me as an actor. And, you know, I got to travel a bit. We did a film in Ireland, which was really exciting. And all of that was great. And that was about, I would say, about a decade of, you know, that kind of work.
Yeah.
And then it was a completely unexpected thing to me, but General Hospital, out of the blue, you know, called and left a message and said, "Hey, are you interested?" I was living in Washington State at the time. I'd been there for about 6 years and commuting to Los Angeles. And, so the show called, and I thought, wow, this is interesting. 10 years later. And I thought, okay, wow, Tony's still on the show. That'd be fascinating. You know, I was about 17 when I left, and I think I was maybe 28 when I came back. And I thought, wow, this would be incredible. I mean, what other job, what other medium do you get to 10 years later, go back and see what that father son relationship is like,
yeah,
you know, as an adult. And then all the other, you know, people obviously and scenes. I mean, it was an amazing experience. And I'm so thankful that it happened. You know, it was such a joy to be there and to see everybody and the crew work with Steve and Maurice and Becky and Tyler and, you know, all of it. It was enriching for me, you know,
absolutely,
in my soul. But having said that,
but
well, I mean, you're asking why the transition took place. It was something close to fatigue. I mean, it was, you know, the storylines were so dramatic and they just didn't stop.
Sure.
I couldn't do it. I just couldn't do it anymore. And I said, look, you know, I probably would have stayed had there been a little more balance, because it's a great job and my family was very happy and settled, but I just couldn't do it. So it was kind of a step of faith, really, to just step away and go, okay, I don't know what's next.
Were you looking for a break from acting necessarily? Obviously that didn't happen, but do you remember that headspace? Like, all right, I'm stepping away from this. Were you planning on just going back to the Pacific Northwest? Like, what was the...
No, I think it had been such a big transition to get my family to LA again. You know, I'd only been there for 2 years, and I couldn't imagine going back to the Northwest at that point. I was pretty settled in LA, and I thought, okay, let's just see what happens. You know?
Okay, yeah. So you know, you were open to something new, wasn't it? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, and I was very focused on the music as well, and that's why the whole Nashville thing was such a crazy opportunity. And you know, but it was, like I said, it was a bit of a step of faith because I didn't know what was next. And, you know, Nashville at that point, when Nashville came back around, it was, you know, I thought, okay, I went the whole 10 years without doing the contracted, you know, primetime TV thing. And now it's like, okay, it's come back around again. And it ended up going 6 years, which was a phenomenal blessing, but it was also, you know, as artists, at least for me, I have a difficult time long-term staying with one. You talk about the zigzags. I kind of need that in my life, you know?
Well, but thinking about, you know, taking on that 6 years and where it landed you geographically.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, you know, what does home mean to you now? Cause I mean, you know, like the Northwest LA and obviously you've been there for what, 6 years, more than six years now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, it was so crazy. I mean, it was very providential because, you know, I'm on General Hospital at that time and here's Steve saying, man, you know, Tennessee is incredible. And, and you got to come out and I'm thinking, Tennessee.
You're like, what's wrong with you?
What are you talking about? He's like, no, you don't understand. You got to come out. You guys love it. I'm just thinking, why would I ever go to Tennessee? You know, I couldn't conceive of it. And it was so crazy because, you know, 2.5 years later, I'm in Franklin. I'm in, I'm in Nashville and Steve's there you know, it's just like, it was crazy.
It was great. It was great great for us, obviously, but great for our kids too. Cause
it was amazing.
Amazing time together, you know, in the backyard, in the backyard where you have a yard.
Yeah.
you know, in a state that you can have a yard. And it's just, it was those, I love those 6 years, man, were so awesome. It was such a great.
Yeah, no, it was amazing.
Our families and our kids and stuff.
And, you know, it was a bittersweet thing, you know, for us, obviously, when Steve went back to LA and, cause you know, we miss having you and your family around, but you know, hey, we get to go to Disneyland and
sure.
That was for you guys, you know, cause I knew it was a really good thing for.
Yeah,
for
no, it's been great for us. Yeah, for sure.
So but in terms of transitions for me, yeah, that's all kind of up in the air right now. You know,
So, but that's, you know, you guys are, I mean, obviously when you have kids, you're always considering what, you know, what's best for them. And so I'm sure that plays a part, but like, and it's a great place if you're going to focus on your music, right?
It is. Yeah. And, you know, I'm definitely focusing. I have been since Nashville ended mostly on music. I did a documentary overseas in Greece last year, which was really fun. And then I
did a documentary about you guys or about something else?
No, about something else. I was a part of the sort of dramatic reenactments of a documentary, cool, which was something I'd never done before. It was kind of a really fun experience. And then there's an indie film I'm supposed to do in March overseas. So those are kind of the only acting things I've been looking at. Other than that, it's been music. You know, we have our new record, Ultraviolet Empire, coming out probably February. I think the first single is going to come out in the next couple of weeks.
So do you have is it jonathanjackson.com? Is it where can they find everything? Can they find books there? Can they find everything there?
jonathanjackson.com. Yep. That's the place to go.
That connects to E Nation and everything too, I imagine.
Yeah, I would just recommend everybody, because we always say this, just opt in for his email list so you don't miss what's going on, whether he's doing another show, another concert, or, you know, when his single's coming out.
All of that.
Because, you know, it's just, you know, there's so many ways to get your information now. It's almost too many ways where you miss it.
Yeah, sure.
You know, so at least we have email where we can, you know, we tell, you know, a lot of people just to get on the list so you don't miss. So get on Jonathan's list and you'll, you know, be up to date with everything he's doing.
One of the interesting things that's taken place for us over the last probably 4 or 5 years is, you know, being in Nashville, there's so many incredible studios and home studios and engineers and all of that. And so in between filming on the show, we've been recording so much music, and we have, you know, at least 3, maybe even 4 albums worth of material that's going to be coming out over the next 5 years.
Wow.
God willing. And so, you know, we're excited to kind of begin that process. And this first song, it's called The Days Are Evil, is really the beginning of that. So we're hoping to just consistently be, you know, putting content out and music.
Yeah.
That's great, man.
So, do you and your brother write together?
We have. Yeah. There's a few songs that we've written together over the years. You know, he's primarily a drummer, but he's a talented piano player as well.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
One of the songs that is one of our favorites we wrote together, called Everything Is Possible.
Love that song.
Oh, thank you. And Feel This as well. We wrote that.
Everything's Possible. Amazing song, dude. Love
awesome.
It.
Thank you.
So you end up writing, or so a lot of these songs are you writing the lyrics and the music yourself, and then you bring the band?
I would say primarily I'm kind of the main writer, and the way that we tend to do things is I'll come up with the blueprint of the song, you know, it's just the lyrics and melody or whatever, and the music, and I come to the band, and then we just deconstruct it, arrange it, try to dream it up, and sometimes we'll come up with, you know, 5 different approaches to the same song, and then go back to the first instinct, which is oftentimes the best.
Today's episode of That's Awesome is brought to you by Forever Note.
Yeah, tell me what this is, because this sounds interesting to me.
Okay, so everyone wants to preserve their family stories, right? You might have someone in your family that is a great storyteller. You might have just a great family story that everyone recounts, and you've always thought, like, wouldn't it be great? You know, I remember my sister sat down with my grandmother and recorded her to preserve the stories. And
yes.
Yeah, and so everyone thinks about that. So here, Forever Note has made it so, so simple. So what happens is you sign a loved one up, or yourself, and you schedule a convenient phone interview. Their team transcribes the audio from the interview and forever prints it as a beautiful keepsake quality book.
It's really
that. Isn't that amazing? Way. Yes. So it makes it easy for families to preserve their most precious memories, traditions, and stories. And the book is, it's professionally edited and designed. You can get interviewed in a variety of languages, Spanish, Mandarin, Korean. Something like this somewhere else would cost like upwards of, I don't know, $2,000.
Well, the problem, but the great thing about this is because my grandpa used to record everything, right? He would record everybody in the family, even me when I was a kid. So, but the problem is all those tapes are in a storage unit somewhere in Indiana that we'll never get.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like, unless I go back and take all this stuff and go through all the stuff. So this sure makes it easy, man. Wow.
Yeah. And so with Forever Note, you get a book authentic to your loved one's voice starting at just $99. And listeners of That's Awesome can get $25 off their order by going to forevernote.com and entering promo code AWESOME.
That's great.
So get started today. Maybe even give the gift of a lifetime in time for the holidays, eh?
Yeah, go check it out.
Go to forevernote.com and enter promo code AWESOME for a special $25 off your order. Does your mind always start with a lyric? Does it start with a melody or is it different for each song? Is it?
It's, yeah, you know, that's an interesting one because it's different. But I've noticed that it's changed over time. You know, when I was young, it was always music and melody first, and then I would have to struggle to come up with lyrics.
Oh, interesting.
And then as I got older, I realized at some point I started just writing lyrics, and then I'd try to figure the music out. And now it's just all of the above, really. And I taught myself how to play piano relatively poorly when I was maybe 14. You know, I took what I knew on guitar and tried to figure it out on piano. But as that grew, now it's interesting because I write probably 75% on the piano, only about 25% on guitar.
Is it just simpler in terms of figuring out melody, like using one hand instead of two? Like,
I don't know. For me, I find the piano opens up melodies, and it's easier to play, you know, root notes over different chords on piano. It's easier to do that than on guitar.
Yes, for
sure.
So
guitar for me, I find myself, you know, when you write a lot and over the course of many years, you get into ruts, you know, so on guitar, it was like, I don't ever want to write a song in the key of G ever again. I mean, you get to that feeling, like if I have to go from G to E minor to C one more time, I'm going to go crazy.
You
know,
yeah,
that's so fun.
So it's just about deconstructing. Sometimes it's a different instrument. You know, I'll write folk acoustic stuff for 6 months and then I'll never want to look at an acoustic guitar again. And I'll go to my electric and try to, you know, go for rock riffs and get tired of that. And then go to the piano and then I'll take a break from the piano after I've, you know, written a ton on there. And so it's just circling around, trying to find where you don't get the feeling of monotony. And
right. Where the freedom is.
Yeah. You know, what was interesting is when I wrote basically a poem, You Killed Romeo.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And at that point, I didn't know, I can't do anything musically. So lyrics are okay. I can figure lyrics out. Even with Scott, we wrote a few songs. You know, and I just gave the papers to Jonathan one day. I'm like, hey, here you go. He's like, what's this? I go, can you write a song? And he's like, I've never done that before with someone else's stuff, so I don't know.
Yeah,
and he goes, I'll let you know. And then he came up with the freaking You Killed Romeo, which is unbelievable. You know, Y&R ended up using it for their whole, like the last 3 minutes of one of their shows.
Right.
Kind of go over all their montages, which was pretty amazing.
Yeah.
But so that was
an amazing experience for me as well, man. That was really fun.
I was like, what the heck? Came up with that.
That was my mini Elton John moment, you know?
Right.
He has a lyricist. And
Bernie gave you the lyrics and you just wrote it? Yeah.
I said, man, this is exciting. I've never done this before.
I was Bernie Taupin with minus the $1 billion. Right.
But thankfully you didn't like kick off any moss or anything. Your lyrics made more sense than Bernie's sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes, right?
No, they were great lyrics. It was actually, you know, it was relatively easy because, you know, the song was there, the lyrics were there, and the story, everything was there. So it was really fun.
Yeah, it was cool, man.
And now he's doing parody lyrics to pop songs that we...
Yeah, now Bradford...
The evolution has been stunning.
Now I'm 50 and I have a 40-year-old sidekick that we're... I don't know what we're doing.
Nice.
Well, we're talking to Jonathan Jackson today, so I don't care.
You talk about, you know, playing free with your vulnerability. We're playing free with pride and shame here.
Yeah, there's no pride.
That's all part of it too, right? Yeah, I mean,
totally. Got to get right.
Fast and loose is what it is.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, dude, I know we could talk for more hours and hours, but we're not going to take up all your time. So where can people find you on social media and everything besides JonathanJackson.com?
Yeah, JonathanJackson.com. Jonathan Jackson HQ, I think, is the Instagram.
The Instagram, yep. Right.
We have had some imposter Instagram accounts, so I do want people to be careful. There are some people posing as me that aren't. Yeah. So it's Jonathan Jackson HQ.
HQ. Headquarters, baby.
Headquarters, yeah, for Instagram and Twitter. As well, I think it's just Jonathan Jackson. It might be Jonathan Jackson Writes. I can't remember, but I'm on Twitter as well. But yeah, we got the new album coming out soon. And you know, we'd love for people to get on the email.
February, is that what you said?
Yeah, we're looking at February now because we're going to try to do some touring in February, and we'd love to have the album released.
Touring here?
In the States, yeah.
In the States, sweet. Awesome.
Yeah. So,
yeah. You know, we've played a few theaters that I think you would love, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah, just a lot of, like the one up in Syracuse, Brad.
Oh, yeah. That one's great.
Just a great, like.
Well, that one in Niagara, too, that one with the black and the gold. Yeah. Anyway, but I mean, he might be on an arena tour, Steve, so.
Yeah, so, sorry. Yeah, that's right.
No, actually, those kind of venues would be great. So we might end up coming through some of those similar.
Yeah, so last question, we'll let you go. So now that you've done, how many people does Opry hold? Couple thousand?
I think the Opry, because the Ryman, I think, is only around 2,500. So okay. The Opry might be close to 5,000 or 6,000 or something like that.
Oh, okay. So so you played the Ryman a lot, and I know you've played a lot of other places that are, you know, 200 seats to 1,000 seats.
Yeah.
O2 was probably awesome because it was such a huge crowd.
Yeah.
So what's kind of the sweet spot, like, for performance-wise that you –
Yeah.
You kind of like, hey, I can really connect. I can't connect with, you know, 80,000 people, but how do you feel? What's kind of the sweet spot, you think?
That's a fascinating question. I mean, it does depend on what kind of show you're trying to do.
Okay.
You know, sometimes when we tour, we do acoustic gigs that are broken down, and oftentimes it's nice to have a more intimate setting for that. But even for the rock band, and I say this not only as a performer, but just as an audience member, because, you know, I've been to the huge shows. You go to, there's Bridgestone Arena. You know, I went to one of the huge shows in Anaheim. I think it was one of U2's shows, and it's, you know, Coldplay, Hollywood Bowl. And so as an audience member, you get a feel for the different size of these venues. And I have to say, you know, for me, I'd say like the size of Royal Albert Hall is pretty incredible. And I don't know the capacity there, but I'm thinking it's probably, maybe it's around 5,000. But anywhere between, I think a theater, and I've played some that are 900 seat theaters all the way up to, you know, 3,000, 5,000 theaters. That's kind of the sweet spot in terms of like the rock band.
Yeah.
Because it's big enough to feel a bit of an expanse, but it's still intimate enough, you know, where you really feel the audience with you.
And if it's just you and the guitar?
Well, if it's just me and the guitar, I think, you know, the smaller is better.
Yeah. That's so interesting, man.
The excitement of having an arena connected with you must be...
Yeah.
Unreal.
Can you imagine, dude? Yeah.
It's surreal, you know. Because the space is so large that it's there's almost a bit of faith that has to take place to believe that the people, you know, out there are actually connected. And you know, Glasgow was one of those shows too, because I think the Nashville tour had, you know, somewhere between 9,000 and 10,000 in the Glasgow shows. Man, the audience, though, there was so much energy and love coming from the audience and excitement. It was like, one of those venues actually started to feel almost smaller because you felt so connected.
Right.
One more. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
And you can tell when an audience is connected together.
Yeah.
Right. Where there's not different things going on, different parts of the place that everybody is together. Go ahead, Brian.
That was a special, you know, moment for me there. Like I mentioned before, was the Simple Minds song, See the Lights, in Glasgow, you know. And as I was singing the song, because Simple Minds, is that's where they're from. And, you know, everyone brought out the lighters and the lights. The whole place was lit up and singing along. And it was something that meant something to them in their history that they're very proud of. And it meant so much to me because, you know, their music has been, it's been a part of my life for a long time. So
I'm fascinated. Sorry. Another question came to mind. You, as I said, you have an ability to make, you know, songs your own. So you probably have had exhilarating moments singing other people's songs in front of major crowds. As your band and your own songs have reached a broader audience, is there a difference or how does it feel when it's your words and your music bringing the crowd to life versus when you're singing a cover?
Yeah.
Is there a difference?
There is. I mean, there is and there isn't. You know, I think just connecting with people in general is a powerful thing because, you know, in some sense, the songs, they don't, on some level, they don't really belong to anybody, right? I mean, sure, they kind of transcend that and they just belong to all of us. So if I was singing Unchained Melody, let's say, or The Killing Moon, or, you know, it's you feel like, it's almost like you feel like those are your songs as well as the audience.
Sure, yeah.
But you're absolutely right. I mean, one of the reasons why I think I got into songwriting and scripts and books was being an actor at a young age, you know, you're given what to say all the time. And so, you know, on some level, I think I just, I really, music is where, it's a place where I get to write the script, so to say. I get to, you know, and so that's a very cathartic, important thing for my world. And it just kind of shocks me when we have those moments where the audience is singing back, you know, the lyrics to Everything Is Possible or Cinematic or any of those things. It's, you know, it still takes me back and is an amazing thing. And, you know, one of the things that means the most to me about the music is when we get to talk to fans before the show or after the show or whenever it is. And those moments where people are kind enough and vulnerable enough to share how a particular song or the music or a performance has meant something in their lives. That's the most beautiful thing out of all of it, really. And that's why we make the music, is because music is healing. And, you know, that's kind of the goal, I think, of, you know, obviously as well as being entertaining and having fun, but there's something healing about connecting. And again, I believe in that with humor, with music.
Well, that's
storytelling in general. That's really what it is.
Yeah, that's the cool thing. You know, when we go on the road, we meet fans, obviously, of the show.
Yeah,
that we've been a part of their life for 30 years, and we've gone through everything with their family, with them.
Yeah, that's
right. You know, and it's always cool to hear those stories. You know, like, oh, you guys were there for me when this happened or this happened, and it really is touching for sure.
Yeah, it's amazing.
For sure. So I'll ask this question, last question. Would you be open to coming back to General Hospital?
Saving that for the very end.
Well, I have to ask.
Yeah, of course. Cool. I always feel like that. You know, when I first left in 99, I always wanted that door to be open, you know, because it means so much to my life. You know, all the relationships and the people that are there, and the history that's there is really it's embedded in my heart. So I'm always open to it. You know, I mean, it's difficult in terms of all the zigzags of music and touring and, you know, scheduling of how all that might work. But I'm certainly open to it. You know,
where is Lucky right now?
Last time I remember it was Ireland. I don't know if, you know, they've been writing that, you know, people have been talking about him. I don't know on the show.
There was an Irish gangster thing, wasn't there, or something?
Yeah, there was
a mob thing.
The cop. Yeah, he was undercover. Yeah, and it got connected with that. And, but I'm pretty sure when I left the show last, I think they were writing that he's, you know, in Ireland. So,
all right.
Well, my dressing room's right next to Jeannie's now.
Oh, nice.
She said, tell Jonathan to get home to his mother. Right.
Oh.
Nice.
Like, oh, would he come back? I can't wait. Yeah. Please have him come back, please. I'm like, I know, really. Well, Jonathan, thank you, man, for your time. And he's going to hate that I'm going to say this. One of the greatest human beings has ever lived. And he's going to hate me for that. But the kindest, most compassionate human being that I've ever met, and a joy to call one of my best friends. So thank you, Jonathan. I appreciate it.
I feel the same about you, brother.
Bradford, you're not bad either.
I'm all right. Sorry. Hey, man, this has been a real delight. Thank you for going there with us. Appreciate it, man.
Thank you both. It's been awesome.
Thanks, dude.
All right.
Jonathan Jackson.
Oh, my.
Oh, my. I love that guy. Hey, you guys, check out his song. It's called The Days Are Evil. Here's a sneak listen.
I got a word. I think it's a timely word. It's for the people. It's for the people. The days are evil. I got a prayer. It's for the people. It's for the people. The days are evil. How are we gonna break through? How are we gonna break through the noise? How are we gonna break through? How are we gonna break through the noise? Me.
I love that. I love it. And so the really cool thing is now, as of today, you guys might be the first people to see this. The video for The Days Are Evil is now up on jonathanjackson.com. So pause the podcast if you want. Go watch the video or listen to us talk for a little bit more and then watch the video. Go to jonathanjackson.com to see the video and hear the entire song of The Days Are Evil. What a treat.
Yes.
What a treat. Look at us. We're making news here. We're making news here.
Dude.
On That's Awesome. I mean, this is where people are going for their entertainment news.
We're breaking news here.
Breaking news. So that was part two. Man, just so great. It's talking to artists is fun.
Yeah, it's always fun, man, because I was thinking about that today, actually, while I was here at work. I'm like, you know, we should ask more people who we work with just in this medium what their process is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I thought that's interesting because you hear about every art. What makes art great is everybody can get to a place differently, right? Yeah. The process is different. So I'm just interested in people's process at this point. Maybe it's boring for other people, but I don't know. But I just find it so interesting because it's just cool.
Well, yeah. And also it is a, I don't know, the way actors, you know, what the work that we do is interesting, right? And the practice of it is finding a way to connect with honest emotion in yourself. And that's a crazy thing to do, you know? So finding how people do that in an honest, organic way, that's going to be interesting because you're learning about the depths of their soul a bit. Yeah, and when you talk to someone cool. like Jonathan, it's like, oh, wow, that's a deep soul.
Yeah. Yeah. He's pretty deep, dude. He's a deep guy. That's for sure. So, Johnny, thanks for coming on the show, man. It was awesome.
Yeah. And talking about depth. Let's go more into that.
Yeah. Tweets, baby.
Mean tweets.
Do you have some good ones? I noticed a few good ones out there.
Oh, dude, it is a...
Anytime Frank tweets about me and you...
It's ripe.
Together, we get... The comments are amazing.
It is ripe. And actually, there are some... There's a couple that we're gonna hold for the live show. They're that good.
Okay.
Yeah. 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 So. Okay, I'm gonna start with this one because it's just simple, straightforward. When will Sonny do us all a favor and deep six Spinelli? So, So that would be great. I mean, if Sonny just killed,
is that a common saying?
I guess
I've never heard. I
look it up.
wasn't that a movie in the '80s? I don't know. But are they meaning deep 6 feet underground?
I think so.
But I've never heard that.
Right.
Yeah. So, all right, cool. Thanks for that, guys. Whoever wrote that. That's awesome.
That's great. I've come to hate the Three Stooges, Jason, Sam, and Spaghetti, Chinless. Hold on. The Three Stooges, Jason, Sam, and Spaghetti, Chinless Ass. I think that's my full name. Spaghetti, Chinless Ass. Chinless. Wait a second. So does that mean my ass is chinless?
No, I don't. I think you're chinless and assless, by the way. Spaghetti chinless assless. That's amazing. Oh, dude. Oh, that's a good laugh.
That is a good laugh. That's what they're here for. They trying to go after others when they are nothing but criminals themselves.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
dude. Because I got a couple actually.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, I've never. I don't really screenshot these often, but I found a couple, which is funny.
Do you want to share them, or are you going to save them?
No, I'll share one. Here we go.
Okay.
It was when Frank tweeted about Sonny, Jason, Sam Spinelli.
Oh yeah. Well, what was that tweet, by the way? Great team, Sonny, Jason, Sam. Great team. And then there's Spinelli.
Hey, you're like a side dish. It's okay. Give me a little side dish of spaghetti.
Actually, you know what?
Chinless ass spaghetti.
That is the appropriate portion, though, a little side dish.
Yeah, a little side dish.
You don't want me as an entree.
No, I do not. Four good reasons not to watch the show. Four overrated actors. Why GH keeps them, I have no idea.
Or overrated. I don't feel overrated.
Really, you're definitely not overrated.
I really don't.
You could say that about me, but not you, buddy.
All right. Well, going from that to people have written us some nice reviews, and I just thought that'd be a nice follow-up to these mean tweets. We really appreciate when people leave us reviews on Apple Podcasts. They're great for helping us spread the word with other GH fans or other fans of television. Yeah, so these people, Shannon says, this podcast is the perfect combination of learning about the podcast guests, getting a glimpse into the soap world, and experiencing the genuine friendship of Stephen Bradford. And some of the best episodes are just Stephen Bradford banter, laugh out loud comedy. That's awesome. Always honors its name.
Well, that's great.
I mean,
what was her name?
That was Shannon.
Shannon. Thank you, Shannon.
Thank you, Shannon. And this one is someone's handle. Doesn't have a real name. So positive and funny. I've been a GH fan for more years than Bradford has been on this earth. I don't know. We'll see. And I'm older than Steve. Okay. these two fellows make me laugh every Wednesday as if I'm being transported back to my college days, where laughing until my side hurt was a daily event.
Yes.
They are funny, engaging, and very charming. Their podcast is a highlight of my week. I always look forward to the next one. My goodness. Thank you so, so much.
Wow. That's, that's a lot of compliments for one day.
I know. I'm a little uncomfortable.
I'm feeling good about that. Well, thank you guys for the reviews. Definitely, yes, they help. So
they certainly do. We appreciate everybody that's written one. If you feel like writing one, leave them wherever you listen, whether it's on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. And now we have a question from Kristen. Thank you for writing in, Kristen. With such demanding shooting schedules for soaps, how do you, as actors, handle working when you are sick? I'm assuming it's not like an office job where you can just call in sick. So what is the process like trying to deal with shooting all those scenes while run down / sick? That is a great question. And as a germaphobe, not only is it something that I have to deal with when I'm sick, but when other people are sick and I work with them, boy, does that make me uncomfortable.
Yeah. There was no taking a day off.
Yeah.
Quite honestly, unless the old school way was, because soap started out live. Mm. right? So you could not, it doesn't matter, unless you were dying and in the hospital,
right?
You're showing up, sure. Right?
Yeah.
So that kind of translated from generation to the next generation of, hey, you show up. If you're not in the hospital, you're showing up, you know? And trust me, there's been times where people have been freaking dying here, laying on their couch, and they know they got four items. They freaking get up, they get themselves ready, they do four items, and they get back on the couch, you know? And, yeah. And you know, because a lot of times when the show airs, you'll hear people losing their voice. Sure. Like, I've had times where I could barely talk.
Yeah, after a Port Chuck tour.
After a Port Chuck tour, and just for being sick, you're just like, sure. You got to do it. I mean, I had a hernia surgery. I came in the next day.
Got to stop lifting such heavy things.
Well, maybe. I did. but I have to lift you on tour, so I got to keep working it out. Dang, my back's tight. Oh man, my back hurts. But you know, so yeah, but now it's kind of like, you know, I love the younger kids, very professional.
Sure.
But they think, you know, this generation thinks that they might
this
be able
generation.
To-
hey, this we're going to change this podcast to two old guys talking about kids.
Well, I'm just saying that the new generation.
Yes.
Makes that they can just call in sick, like, you know, you're working at a Starbucks or something.
Yeah. How? Yeah.
Like, hey, I'm not coming in today. What do you mean you're not? What do you mean you're not coming in today?
Yeah.
And now playing the part of.
Right. No kidding. Well, because that's the thing is so many people, you can't reschedule these things.
No, you can't reschedule. You know, and
because
if they cut the scenes, they're just cut and they're done.
They're just cut forever. Because you can't, you know, so much of the schedule is based on. You know, it's all based on the scenes that are playing that day. So sets come in. Everything is based on those actors being there to shoot that scene. And if they're correct. Not there and they put that set away, it may not come back out. Exactly.
Yeah, or because if they're not there and they have to redo it, they're going to have to repay the actors, repay the directors, repay everybody.
Right.
And they're not sometimes like, oh, well, it's not worth the expense. So moving on. Well,
that's the thing is because, the directors are hired per episode. So if you sure. have, if you say, think, oh, well, we can shoot this 2 days from now. No, you can't because that director's not there. So
yeah,
it's,
or they have to pay a segment fee.
Right.
To,
exactly.
To a new director.
Right.
Right. So, and then the other thing is too, sometimes when a love scene is called for or kissing and your partner's deathly ill,
yeah,
you get to kind of not do it.
There have been times where I've asked with, you know, also being sensitive to my acting partner, hey, you know, I know it calls for a kiss here. Can we do something else?
Sure. Like, yeah,
you know, just because
and everybody's cool with that because nobody wants to get sick and transfer, you know, viruses around. So
right.
Good question though. That's a great question.
Great
but
question,
I, you know, question. I've never missed a day of work because of how I was taught by the prior generation, the greatest generation of our time.
Yeah,
they taught us how to show up.
Yeah, yeah,
and do your job and work.
Yeah, but no, it is a fascinating question, and you're right. It is. Yeah, as we explained, if you have any ability to show up, you show up because
I mean, dude, even like with Port Chuck, we did it. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, yeah,
like I was dead.
Yeah,
I was dead. You guys left me for dead.
Yeah, we don't.
No, like, you left me for dead.
Yeah, we did. Yeah. In the basement of Mohegan Sun.
Yeah, you left me for dead.
Well, we just thought you needed to sleep it off. We were trying to be generous.
Or die.
Or die.
Thanks.
Either way, there was nothing we could do.
So we're going to go gamble and drink.
Yep.
Have fun, Steve.
Yeah.
You guys threw me like some Gatorade and cornflakes. You're like, ah, good luck.
I read this story about how I don't know if someone sent it to me or if I saw it, but I immediately sent it to my wife. Red wine can serve as an antibacterial in your throat.
Yeah. I saw that actually. Somebody posted that for you.
Yeah. That's the best thing. It's the best news ever. As a germaphobe and as a drunk, it's the best thing ever.
Yeah, but just one sip, dude. Not two bottles.
Well,
it's not the more.
More you drink, it doesn't become more effective.
Well, depends on what your mission is. If it's Friday night, yeah, it's more effective.
So
what? Well, yeah, it is Friday. Cool.
It is. Yeah, we are recording this on a Friday. Awesome. Well, thank you everybody for hanging in for part two. Awesome. Just awesome.
We're just having so much fun. And Welcome to the new supporters, by the way, because we got a bunch of new supporters last
week.
Yeah,
so cool.
Great. And our prior supporters, I don't want to say old supporters because that's not fair.
Right.
Which is cool because people are starting to come to our shows. We're getting all these emails now like, hey, supporters are coming to your show. Can we get a couple tables?
Right.
So I'm doing the best I can, by the way, on that.
Sure. Yeah.
So some venues are already, you know, you have to pick your seats.
Sure.
And then some venues you don't.
That's right.
So we'll obviously accommodate you guys as much as we can, supporters. So thank you. And Bradford and I have a new little song coming out soon.
That's right. And we got some great dates coming up. Just a week and a half away is Tacoma in Portland.
Yeah, buddy.
Pretty exciting. Pretty exciting.
Very exciting.
And then Nashville.
Detroit. And Nashville, January. Detroit. Dude, I don't know what the heck's going on, but January is already selling.
It's amazing.
I don't even know what's happening. It's like, Linda called. She's like, dude, you guys have sold like 100 tickets already.
So what's cool about January.
Oh my gosh.
I know. It's awesome. So in 2020, starting in January, we are starting a very cool partnership with the Sandy Roman Ovarian Cancer Foundation. And we are partnering with them to bring as much awareness to their charity and to their mission as possible. So we are so thrilled about that. You'll see their stuff included in all our materials for our 2020 stuff.
Yeah,
so if you see their logo, you're going to see their logo just about everywhere.
Yeah.
And we're super happy about that.
We're excited to do that. And Robin, who runs Sandy Roman, is an amazing woman. So we're so excited to raise awareness, man.
Yeah. Yeah. So, so when you see the beautiful teal colors,
Yeah,
and teal goes well with Steve's eyes. So he'll be your eyes, and that beautiful teal will be
teal shirt.
Cool. So thank you, everybody. Go to Stone Cold and the Jackal.
You guys are awesome.
StoneColdandTheJackal.com to see all of our dates. If you're new to the podcast, you can go back and hear previous podcasts. Everything you need is right there. Thanks to Jonathan. Thanks to Forever Note. Remember, go to forevernote.com and enter promo code AWESOME for $25 off your unique order. Thank you to you, Steve.
Thank you, brother. Love you guys.
Love you all. Bye. Hey, friends. As always, a big thank you for listening to the show this week. We and the folks at Podcast One would like to ask you a small but very important favor. It'll only take a few minutes, and if you're one of the first people to do it, Podcast One will make it worth your time, literally. We'd love you to complete a short survey because the information you give us can help make things better for the show and for you as a listener. So just go to podcastone.com/survey and everything will be right there for you. That's podcastone.com/survey. And the first 250 people who complete the survey will get a $10 gift card to amazon.com, and two grand prize winners will be selected at random to get a $100 Amazon gift card. How about that? Free money. Not bad. As you may know, our shows are supported by advertisers, so filling this out will really help us cater to the needs of you as a listener. So please, please go to podcastone.com/survey, answer some questions, and potentially make some money along the way. Thank you all.